The Radio Today program with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Thanks for choosing the weekly podcast from Radio Today. I'm Stuart Clarkson. Coming up later in this episode, more classic audio from the archive with David Lloyd in Radio Moments. And James Cridland gives us his thoughts on magic flipping to an all-Christmas format. But the main event is our December roundtable, hosted by Trevor Dan.
Welcome to the Marie Celeste. This is where Jazz FM used to be, and in a sense it still is, because there's still some branding. But all the microphones now say The Totally Football Show, and that's because Muddy Knees are the only people here in Margaret Street. But it is still the venue, we're delighted to say, for the Radio Today Roundtable for December. Let us see who's sitting round that table.
Hello, I'm Will Jackson, and I'm Managing Director of Audio UK.
Which is?
The trade body for audio production companies working in radio, podcasts, audiobooks and more.
And you've got one of your members here.
Yeah, I'm Kelly Weil, Head of 7 Digital Creative.
Hi, I'm Michael Hill, I run Radio Player.
Now, I want to start with Radio Player. You've invented another new thing, Mike, which you always do. Every time I see you, you've invented a new thing in your garage. What is this new thing?
It's a continuation from the old thing, and that is that we're doing a lot of stuff around cars. As we all know, radio is incredibly important in cars. 25% of all listening in the UK, 50% in the US, and somewhere in between those two in every country in Europe. Cars are becoming connected, more competition in the dashboard, Spotify and Apple Music. What can we do about it? By working together. So we're doing a couple of things. One, we're getting everyone's metadata, the logos and the streams that they send us in Radio Player, and offering them to car companies. And two, we're looking at how broadcasters want their content presented in the cars of the future. So that's what we've built recently. It was called a reference radio. And if you Google Radio Player reference radio, you'll find a YouTube video of how it works.
I was going to play a sound clip of it, but it doesn't really work. But when you do watch it, and I would recommend anybody listening to this to actually go on that and look at it, it does suddenly feel much more like an intuitive interaction with your dashboard.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of modernising car radios. So car radios, unfortunately, as a broadcast industry, I think we're all guilty of letting them find their own way. And some car radios are fantastic and some car radios are less easy to use. So what we've done is we've asked the BBC and Global and Bauer and smaller stations and stations across the world how they want their content to be presented on car touchscreens. And they've come back to us and helped us design this reference user experience, which basically is very simple. It's a single station list of all stations, whether you're on DAB, FM or streaming, one station list, so the poor old user doesn't have to remember platforms like AM and LW and FM and DAB anymore. They just look for it through an A to Z station list, tap it, it plays, nice big logo appears, and you can also voice control it.
Let me throw this open in a second, but why do I need my car to do this when I've got my smartphone and it can do it? I mean, I had a slightly otherworldly experience a couple of weeks ago of driving from Leipzig to Berlin, listening to 5 live football commentary. Absolutely perfect. And all just coming down onto the phone.
Yep.
Why do I need to interact with the dashboard if I can do it all on the mobile? That was Kelly banging her mic, by the way, which still happens even in the digital world.
Very sorry.
Well, depending on who you believe, we think that in between 10 and 20 years' time, everything we listen to and watch will come over the internet. I think most people probably believe that. It's a bit like climate change. The weight of opinion is on that side of things. In the UK, if you drive around the M25, you could probably do what you've just described, and you'd have 2 or 3 glitches all the way around the M25. In other words, a reasonable experience, actually. Soon as you turn off onto an A road or a B road and go down a little hill and back up again, you will lose that signal. You will not be able to stream what you streamed.
So what we need is what you've got, which is the ability for the car to say, I can get this online or I can get it off FM or, you know, whatever's best.
So for the medium term, and I'm talking about, you know, between 5 and 15 years probably, we're going to need an intelligent smart radio that can look for the content wherever it needs to be found. And that could be streaming, but it could also be DAB or FM.
Where have you got on this journey, Kelly?
Well, I had a look at the YouTube video and it was absolutely gorgeous. And I was thinking, will this work in my 12-year-old Honda Civic? And unfortunately, I don't think it will. So I think for me, the challenge is one of buying a new car, which will enable me to have access to this beautiful interface and uninterrupted football commentary.
Do you find at the moment that simply finding the sound that you want in your car, whether that's a podcast or a linear radio station, is just a bit difficult?
Yeah, and you know what? I don't bother. I just listen to the stations that I know I can get a good reception on in the journeys that I do. I don't spend that much time in the car, but I know I do very specific journeys like a lot of people, and I know which stations have got a good signal. I just listen to them. That's probably a bit lazy, but it's honest.
Will.
And isn't this telling about radio wages that I drive a five-year-old Ford Fiesta? It's Britain's top-selling car and I can barely work the DAB radio. It's a terrible, terrible user experience that requires me to know that digital one is on frequency block 11D. See, I'm an anorak, I know that, but I'm guessing that the average punter is not going to be able to find things. So again, it's a brilliant thing to look at with a big logo and the text. From an operator's point of view, from a broadcaster's point of view, with small-scale DAB coming very soon and a lot of smaller community stations going on those muxes potentially that might not have much technical resource, will it be easy for them to send logos and the metadata that you've talked about to the car radio?
Yeah, it's primarily just a good car radio. So actually, if they weren't part of Radio Player or they didn't send anything to the internet at all, we would still receive and display their stations probably better than most car radios do. So on a broadcast level, it's already better. And then if it does have an internet connection, it can pull in, as I say, logos, in the future, podcasts, and add voice control as well. So it's a sort of hierarchy of data, and it will work at the lowest hierarchy just on DAB and FM.
I was just thinking about Kelly, and you like folk music, you play folk music, that's your thing.
Yep.
The idea behind BBC Sounds, as I understand it, is that if not now, but very soon, you'll simply be able to say, hello, BBC Sounds, give me folk, and it'll find some folk from somewhere. Can Radio Player do that as
well? Yeah, and that's a brilliant thing. So if you go download the Radio Player app, type in folk, and I guarantee you will find both live stations featuring a lot of folk, because they've put that word in their metadata, and catch up and on demand and podcast shows with a lot of folk in it. BBC Sounds is a fantastic product, but it's in its early stages. The BBC would admit that.
And what's that marvellous acronym you just used before we started?
They've launched it as an MVP, which is a minimum viable product.
An MVP.
And I thought that was a big car.
I thought it was a most valuable
SUV. Yes. No, and it's a very well known and very sensible way of launching a new product onto the market. It basically means get something out there, and then see what the users think, and iterate it and make it better.
Thank you very much for all that, Mike. Let's move on and talk about something else that's been on my mind recently, which is Brexit. Yes, I'm sorry, but I've been wondering about how radio journalism is coping with Brexit. Now it's becoming even more complicated than in or out, leave or remain. There's so many shades of different opinion. And we've said before on this podcast that the BBC fell into a bit of a hole a couple of years ago of saying, right, we've got to have a balanced argument, which meant that they, if they had somebody who thought the earth was round, they had to have a flat earther on just to balance the argument. And the BBC concept of impartiality, in fact, the British journalism concept of impartiality, is threatened when you've got multiple answers and multiple shades of opinion. Will, I know you follow a lot of political coverage and podcasts as well as online. How do you think UK radio journalism is shaping up to this challenge?
Well, I'd like to single out, and I'm sure you've seen the clip as well, Chris Mason, who I think is an excellent radio journalist. Just, it's got to a point where he's shrugged his shoulders and said, you might just as well get Mr. Blobby back on to offer his analysis, because frankly, I suspect his is now as good as mine. Now, I studied government at university, the processes and institutions, not political theory, and I haven't got a clue. This is way beyond, you know, this is for disciples of Erskine May to try and understand the intricacies of this. And, you know, Chris cuts through that brilliantly. And I'm really pleased that there's been at least some honesty rather than people saying, well, we obviously know this is going to happen, when nobody knows. I'm pretty sure Theresa May doesn't know how this is going to turn out in less than 10 days' time at time of recording.
So doubt is a good thing, isn't it,
in
a journalist?
So. I think honesty is about it. Just saying, if we don't know, don't try and bluff your way through. Nobody likes a bluffer.
Is that something that podcasting is bringing into radio journalism? The idea of saying, well, we're going to try and find out, but we're not sure whether we'll be able to.
I'm not sure that's necessarily introducing it, because there have always been scales on the reporting where the Today programme is the programme of record and does things in a formal way, and Five Live talk about things in a more informal way and take calls and so on. So I think there's always been that scale. But undoubtedly, the wider ecosystem now does mean there are more different approaches to it. And the other thing I would say is around the experts, which has always been a debate in Brexit. Oh, we don't need the experts anymore. I think we do, but it's also about representing the whole of the UK. And I think in the expertosphere, if that's a word...
It is now.
There was a general consensus that we would be remaining in the UK in the vote. And I'm telling you, and I'm not representing myself at all as a man of the people, but if you'd been in the pubs of Chelmsford, and I spend half an hour or two in there, then you would have heard the voices saying, no, we need to leave. And I think it's about getting out of that bubble and getting out and reporting. And I think that's what Chris, who's very clearly rooted in Yorkshire, has done.
Kelly, does your heart sink when you hear the word Brexit on any podcast or news bulletin?
You know, about 12 months ago it did, but it doesn't anymore. Because the more it goes on, it just gets more and more fascinating. I could not agree with you more about Chris Mason. I mean, as much as anyone, it's a bit like the teacher at school who gets you interested in something really boring. He's absolutely brilliant, and he's a star of Brexit Cast. I love that show with its DIY. It's got a real DIY feel about it. It's really accessible, isn't it? And yeah, I'm more interested in it now than I have been since the referendum because of that. Nobody knows it's a genuine drama, and no one knows how it's going to end.
Let's take a short pause and just listen to a clip from Brexit Cast.
Right, shall we play out with a little bit of music?
Brexit Cast.
Brexit Cast.
From BBC Five Live and BBC News.
Who knows about Brexit? No one's got a f***ing clue what Brexit is.
Brexit is,
If there is some difficulty to have the agreement of the Brexit, it's my fault.
What do you think about Brexit?
What's that?
This is the moment to chuck checkers.
A process which I can only describe as a dog's Brexit.
Remainers and leavers, that's going to end well.
It's like this mad riddle that no one knows what it is. What?
It's Chris Mason at Westminster.
This is like that game. Who's next?
Who's next?
It's Adam in Brussels.
Laura, do you want to go at the same time?
I'll go in it, yeah. It's Laura, yeah, we're getting really good at this. It's Laura at Heathrow, sitting waiting for the PM to get here so we all get on the RAF Voyager, May Force One, and go to the G20 in Argentina.
And it's Dr. Adler in London for once.
And so we are recording on Thursday morning to squeeze in Laura's appearance before that long old flight. And the Prime Minister, you know, people talk about the Prime Minister, Laura, and her energy, her desire to just plough on and plough on and plough on. And I thought, as an example of that, what better way to prepare for a mega long transatlantic flight than spending an hour and a half in the company of the sages of Parliament and the liaison committee and facing questions from every conceivable angle about Brexit and then going to the airport?
Well, that's right. And then, of course, on the plane, having to do a huddle with the fine ladies and gentlemen of Her Majesty's lobby, asking questions on all the things that she maybe didn't quite answer to MPs when she was in front of that.
I chose that clip because there are four BBC correspondents who are asked to appear on the Today programme and on the BBC One News at 10, and they have that constraint and formality about them when they do. Here they are just kind of shooting the breeze, and it's a very attractive listen, isn't it, Mike?
It is, and what's really interesting, Laura Kunzberg, who appeared in that latest episode of Brexit Cast, almost kind of scratched off the covering of BBC News, because she said at one point, people are obsessed with the gaming of it, rather than actually whether this deal is a good thing. And what she was referring to is the Westminster noise around, you know, who's going to vote for that and who's going to pass a motion on this. And I think she was almost referring to herself slightly there as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we are obsessed with this detail. And I think what she was saying was we need to all step up a level and see whether this deal is a good thing. And I welcome this. I was a BBC news journalist for about 10 years, and it was in simpler times. And we knew that we had to mostly have a fairly binary balance algorithm of time on air, particularly around elections, where it got a bit more complicated, but it was still perfectly doable. But now I think that that model is completely broken. It's been smashed into smithereens on the floor, and we're looking at the cogs twitching, you know, and it's fascinating to see what impartiality is going to mean for the BBC in the future. There is a clue, though, in a great guy called Jonathan Foster, who used to lecture in journalism at Sheffield Uni, once said, if one guy says it's raining and the other guy says it's dry, your job as a journalist is not to quote them both. Your job is to look out of the fucking window and report the truth. And I think there's something in that. And I think we'll return to truth-seeking in journalism. I hope so, as a result of this.
There's a leak today, as we record this, by Kamal Ahmed, who's about to become the director of, I think, editorial policy for the whole of the BBC, formerly the economics correspondent, saying to internal BBC staff, kind of, yes, you've got to tell the story. Just saying one man says this and another man says that isn't enough. And that's what that quote says so eloquently. Will.
I think it's about having the confidence. And I think everybody at the BBC is trying to rediscover. And Tony Hall has said that it's about being confident in your reporting and not thinking, how will this play out on either side?
Do any of you think that LBC are a bit ahead of the curve on this by saying, here is Nigel Farage talking directly to you, rather than here is a person being interviewed by an impartial intermediary? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
In a sense, they've just looked at the problem from another perspective. They've said, look, we can't do programmes that are internally balanced in themselves because they're either boring or not balanced. So we're going to find some really interesting people who are extreme in their own views and use them to balance the whole network. So they're still, Global would claim, a balanced, impartial network across the day, but individuals are allowed to be extreme and forthright in the individual programmes. I think it's a fascinating listen.
I just fell for that binary trap there by saying, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because what I should have said is, what shade between good and bad might that be painted?
It's just a thing.
It's a thing. This is the Radio Today roundtable for December, and we'll be back after this message, which you can believe in or not.
Is it from Santa? Please say yes.
It should be.
I'll keep that in.
Oh, hello there, boys and girls. Are you getting excited for the big day yet? Just me, then. This Christmas, I've had lots of my elves telling me about this thing everybody wants in their stocking this year. It's called Clean Feed. If you've got a Laplando bee coming up, or maybe your presenter's doing his show outside my grotto in the Arndale, then you need Clean Feed. It's great for radio shows and podcasts. It uses wizardry of the internet and a web browser to hook you up in top-notch quality. You can even record it all too. How marvelous! The best thing is Clean Feed doesn't cost a penny to get started. You can sign up in that spare minute between putting up the tree and wrapping your presents. Give it a go. It's magical. Find out more at cleanfeed.net. That's cleanfeed.net. And have a very Merry Christmas. Now, let me check my naughty list. Yep, Trevor Dan's on it again this year.
Thank you, Santa, for that message. Kelly Wilde is here from Seven Digital, Mike Hill from Radio Player, Will Jackson from Audio UK, and so much more. Will, the Audio Production Awards, we've had a lot of awards recently. Yours were the latest. I'm saying yours because you were basically in charge of them. Kelly was there, Mike and I were not. How did you feel it went?
I thought it was very good. Trevor Nelson is an excellent and capable host, who brings an informality to the proceedings that I think was generally popular.
Did he pronounce DivaWeb properly this
he
year?
He did pronounce our good friends at DivaWeb properly. It was written out with four E's on his card. We had record entries and record tickets sold. I think it's now firmly established as the leading London-based event for producers each year. As always, there's feedback. We're going to be doing a survey of everybody who attended to see what we can do better next year.
What did you make of it, Kelly?
I enjoyed it. You know, there's been obviously a lot of chat between colleagues and online post-event, as there always is. And, you know, I think Audio UK has been doing a lot to try and reach audio producers from different corners of the sector, from more diverse areas, from podcasters as well as just the traditional radio producers. And I think we're, you know, it takes a long time to achieve that kind of change, but I thought we were starting to see more variety this year in the types of audio producers that we're entering. So I view that as a entirely good thing, and we look forward to making more progress, yeah, in future.
What would make you go, Mike?
An invitation.
Yes, me too. I didn't want to pay either, Will.
And you'll remember this when I think I went with you to a production awards event that was in a hall below a student building.
When it was the RPAs.
And this is the ninth now of the Radio Production Awards and Audio
it's
Production Awards.
It's developed properly,
hasn't it? And it's developed. And that brings some challenges with it as well around, as the event becomes bigger, making sure that it's still affordable to the whole of the industry. And that's something we'll be looking at to make sure it continues to be as inclusive as possible.
This time next week, I shall be interviewing the new MD of the Radio Academy. His name is Sean Childerly. What would you have me ask him?
What's it for?
Good question.
I was going to say that, but I didn't want to appear rude or
aggressive.
Well,
no, but actually, I think it's a valid question, isn't
it? You know, other than the arias, which the Radio Academy have produced very successfully for a long time, yeah, just a bit of a refocus into what is it actually for and how is it distinct and different from what Audio UK is doing, and how can we engage with you and get involved. Yeah.
I must say I didn't mean that rudely or aggressively. I'm a fellow of the Radio Academy, and it was a huge honour to receive that fellowship. It feels like it should exist, but I'm genuinely interested in hearing what he thinks it's for.
And I think to carry on what Kelly was saying about the production awards, Sean's background from the email that we've been sent about his appointment is in training and apprenticeships and local TV too. So I think we can see that the direction the Academy will want to go in. We know that Yvonne Thompson is rightly passionate about diversity, so I suspect there'll be a focus going forward on development and training. So it will be about how it represents the whole industry, and that's not just a diversity challenge, that's about bringing global back into the fold and getting everybody properly participating in both the radio festival and the arias.
Well, we'll find out more next week. And what do we make of Ricky, Melvin and Charlie moving from KISS to Radio 1? To come off a breakfast show and go to an evening show suggests to me that this is temporary, that they've got a greater ambition somewhere. What do we make of this?
I mean, we've seen, you know, producers and managers move between the BBC and commercial sector over the past few years, and now it's happening.
There's a lot more of it than there used to be.
Yeah, I mean, even just this year, we've seen a number of it. Again, it's interesting. Yeah, I'm sure they have got visions of a different show maybe, but be interesting to see how it sounds and what the network, you know, does, if anything.
Do you think they'll sound, from the experience we have had over the years, will they sound different on the BBC than they did in a commercial environment?
Why would you hire Ricky and Melvin and Charlie to do a different act? If you're hiring them, you're hiring them. That's always been my philosophy with talent. You know, I think that the story I was told 100 years ago was somebody trying to, it may even have been you, Trevor, trying to direct Simon Bates, and was told, if you want Bates, hire Bates. If you don't want Bates, don't hire Bates.
I
think that sort of story is, why would you hire them and then try to mould them into something different? But what a time to be talent. When there's a genuinely competitive market, commercial radio, when you've got big companies like News Corp bringing the fight to the BBC, it's a really exciting time. And we shouldn't just also focus on radio stations when you've got people like Rowan Collinson going to Spotify. Those sorts
For those
of
who don't
moves,
know Rowan, just remind us who he is and what he does.
Long-standing track record in production. Previously at Something Else.
And online
and so on. So there's a lot of competition for that talent, and There were newspaper reports about Fern Cotton going to Virgin as well. So, you know, I think we'll see these moves continuing and speeding up in 2019.
Did any of you see this extraordinary article by Mark Lawson in the Radio Times? I mean, Mark has some reason to be angry at the BBC, which we won't explore. But this was an incendiary piece about how basically rubbish Radio 2 management are. I appreciate you do a lot of work for them, Kelly, so you might not want to comment. I'll go to Mike first.
Oh, thanks for that. Yeah, the BBC are a major shareholder in Radio Player as well. So, look, it's any massive radio station like Radio 2 is like any complex system. It's like the weather or the stock market. It's cyclical. It's going to go through periods of stability, which it has done, and growth and incredible creativity. And then that period is going to be followed by a bit of chaos and churn. And that's what we've hit right now. Arguably, it's better to get all that out of the way in one hit, and then you can see what the station's going to become and let the organism settle again.
That's quite forgiving, Kelly.
I mean, I don't know how fascinating this piece would have been to somebody who doesn't work in radio and who doesn't provide programmes to Radio 2 every week, but, you know, I just found it. It's a bit like, I don't know, a bit like watching reality TV. I just found it fascinating. And
can I read a bit out? Would you mind? I thought this piece was particularly eloquent. This is Mike Lawson writing. He says, within the BBC, presenters and producers, in what is inevitably an off-the-record collage of impressions because they've been instructed under a standard clause in contracts not to speak publicly, give a picture of a serious breakdown in trust and communication between the hosts and makers of programmes and the bosses.
I mean, I can't obviously speak on behalf of Radio 2, but there's been so much stuff to make presenters angry. So much going on, hasn't there, in the last 12 to 18 months. It's not surprising that it's kind of come to a bit of a head. But, you know, as far as Radio 2 is concerned, we're going to be going into the new year with a female presenter of Breakfast and Drive. So, you know, you may call it a meltdown, but I think that's going to be a major moment in British radio.
As an independent producer, Kelly, how do you feel about Radio 2's relationship with the specialist community? You know, we're not just folk, but, you know, country and jazz and all those other things, and documentaries and so on. Are they pulling away from some of that stuff? The evidence would suggest they are.
Yeah, I know there's been a bit of concern, especially in the independent community lately, with the schedule changes and things, moving documentary slots around and stuff. I mean, I have to say that we've been, you know, very lucky to have had, you know, we produce a folk show for Radio 2 and a jazz show for Radio 3. I'm not sure that the support is particularly being withdrawn from the specialist areas. I just think it's being, they're having challenges, aren't they, across the board. And so it's bound to sort of hit everywhere a little bit. But I do think they're still doing a good job for specialist music.
Well, there's an Ofcom requirement that they have to do a certain amount of music, of documentaries and, yeah, the public service elements of the schedule. We wouldn't want to see those marginalised. They have to meet those criteria. That's part of the agreement with the government. And as long as they hit that, and you could argue, and I'm not saying that this is right, but you can argue that as more of those programmes are listened to online, actually the linear schedule to some extent and their place in that becomes less important. I don't think we're quite there yet, when the vast majority of radio is still live, but we are getting to a place where if you want to find folk music, you can do it exactly as Mike described through your apps, so it is still accessible. But we would want to see that, I think, clearly supported in the central popular parts of the schedule, whether that's by trailing and signposting or whatever.
One more thing before we hear our guests' recommendations. It's Christmas. I mean, if you're listening to Magic, it's been Christmas for 3 or 4 days now. I could probably play an extract from last December's roundtable where we talked about this, but is this a good thing or is there a shade of opinion thing, Kelly? Do you like Christmas?
You know what? I do like Christmas. I'm not sure I'd want to listen to Christmas music all day long on the radio.
But you know, working what? In Asda, wouldn't
it? There are lots of people that do, and you know, it's what fits well with their brand values as a network, isn't it? It's all about mood, isn't it? Now, our listening, and to me, it seems like probably something that'll do well for them. But it'll be interesting to see how the. I don't know if it'll be easier to measure just on 1 month with radio.
It sells a lot of ads.
It'll be easier to see how it pans out for them.
Oh, I think, okay, you can hold me to this. I think that we'll see a radar bump from it. I think that they're clever people. And I can't think of a UK station on which it would fit better, actually, flipping to Christmas than Magic. So I think I think this will work for them.
Well, I know if Paul Sylvester was here and he and I did the last Christmas podcast, he'd be in a Christmas jumper and, if he could, Christmas trousers and Christmas scarf too. But it's a bar humbug from me. I think it's too early. I'm a traditional programmer. You put one song an hour from December the 1st and gradually build it up from there. I'm a big fan of Ronan and Harriet. It's what I wake up to, and I've switched it off.
Bet you a fiver it bumps the ratings.
Oh, I'll...
Right, that's a podcast topic for next
month. They're shaking on it.
We'll see.
Okay, ads, and then what have our friends been listening to?
Broadcast Bionics brings you Phonebox, Oasis, Virtual Director, and many more innovative solutions for creative radio people. Come to bionics.co.uk and find out more.
This is my favourite bit always of the podcast. I tell you what, let's go with Kelly. Before you start, just give us a plug for your live performance that you're doing, which I'm excited about.
Oh, yeah. Well, just to give the context. So my route into radio was through folk music, which I used to do for a living, don't anymore. But I still do a tour for 2 weeks with the Albion Christmas Band for 20 years now. It's our own Christmas tradition. So I'll be going out on the road from next Saturday.
Isn't that exciting? Now, that's something the rest
Christmas
of us can't
show.
Do.
Absolutely.
Well done. And oddly enough, we're going to drop that F-bomb again because you brought two folk ideas. Yeah?
I have. And I feel like folk has had a really good share of the discussion time today, so thank you very much. Other specialist genres are available. Firstly, this is on a community radio station in Sheffield, and there's a show every week called Thank Goodness It's Folk. And I mention it because this is two guys called Sam Hindley and James Fagan, who's a great musician, and they do this every week. It's on FM in Sheffield, it's on online, and they do it just because they love it. I mean, I don't know, but I doubt they make any money. In fact, it probably costs them money.
They haven't spent any money on microphones, that's for sure.
I'm sure the resources they have to... But you know what? What I love about this show is they do it because of passion and because they genuinely want to share a passion for something, and that inspires me. And sometimes I wish that I did more stuff for that reason and not because it pays my bills or it's part of my job. And I find that really inspiring, so good on them.
Here's a clip which has a very poignant beginning.
Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield. Made by you.
This is Roy Bailey and you're listening to Sheffield Live on 93.2 FM.
Welcome back to Thank Goodness It's Folk on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. That was Will Pound And thank you to James for taking care of the first half. And Will Pound will be appearing in Sheffield at our Live at Sam's House concerts tomorrow night. And that should be a really great night. Really looking forward to hosting Will. Will, and if you've not got your tickets yet, do buy them and come along. It'll be fantastic. Really will. Get your spaces through the website. In the meantime, where am I going? Oh, it's the Great British Folk Festival this weekend, and on the bill, amongst others, is the wonderful Oyster Band. Let's have something from them. Oyster Band Acoustic and the Oxford Girl.
So there's Thank Goodness It's Folk from Sheffield Live with Roy Bailey speaking at the beginning. And this latest show, they were commemorating him.
Passed away a couple of weeks back. Legend of folk music, Roy Bailey. And they did a lovely tribute to him with great choices of music. So good on them.
I think one of the greatest things about Sheffield Live, wait for this, is the name of their breakfast show. It's called Sheffield Uprising. Isn't that great? You feel you want to march behind a banner. Sheffield Uprising. We'll come back to your next choice in a minute. Let's go to Mike.
Well, you were saying about doing it for passion versus paying the bills, but my first choice is a guy who's managed to pull off both of those things, David Rodigan on One Extra. I've loved him forever. And in his last episode, he was delighted by the recent UNESCO decision to name reggae music as an international cultural treasure.
Let's hear it.
And on tonight's show, well, before we go any further, we must, of course, continue the dancing in the streets and the dancing in the studios here, because, as I'm sure you heard on the news, on Thursday morning, UNESCO announced that reggae music is worthy of protecting and promoting due to its contribution to international discourse on issues of injustice, resistance, love and humanity, as at once being cerebral, socio-political, sensual and spiritual. The basic social functions of the music as a vehicle for social commentary, a cathartic practice and means of praising God have not changed, and the music continues to act as a voice for all. There you go. So, that's a big deal, isn't it, for the music? So that means when I'm when I go to playlist meetings at the BBC, I can say, you know, they say we should be promoting this.
I wonder if you spotted the little edit. I had to shorten that because he went off down a country lane about what UNESCO stands for. But anyway, that's the wonderful David Rodigan. And really good clip too. Do you want to do your second one now?
Yeah,
Mike?
So I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to radio and space, in fact, as well. So combining the two, I've been listening to the Scientific American 60 Second Science podcast. And they did quite a rare thing recently, actually. They did a quick turnaround podcast, a sort of almost live coverage of the recent landing of the Mars InSight probe, which, for those of you who don't know, it's currently sitting on the red planet and is about to dig a 5-metre deep hole to check for seismic activity, and it's an incredible mission. And so they did a quick turnaround of this fantastic audio from Mission Control in NASA as this poor lander was braving the incredible conditions and hurtling towards the planet's surface.
30 metres, 20 metres, 17 metres, standing by for touchdown.
It won't be until about 8 p.m. Eastern time today that NASA knows if InSight's solar panels are out and working correctly. They needed to literally wait for the dust to settle from the landing before deploying the panels.
Touchdown confirmed.
For Scientific American's 60 Second Science, I'm Steve Mirsky.
That is quite exciting, actually, isn't it? We shall follow that up. Let's go to Will. Now, you've got a bit of science-y stuff, but yours is science fiction.
That's right. So I've picked a couple of dramas that were featured at the recent Radio TechCon conference around technical matters. One of those is the Vostok K incident, which is a BBC Taster immersive drama where you can connect phones, tablets and laptops together to produce a surround sound experience. So, again, back in Chelmsford, I have a very small living room with no room for Dolby 5.1, no matter how much I want it. But by connecting devices, additional devices, and then locating them around you in the stage.
Does Mrs. Jackson have to stand over by the kitchen holding the iPad?
Exactly that. and a laptop in another corner, and then your smart speaker somewhere else, you can use those additional speakers to create a fully immersive experience. And the important thing here as well is that the drama, the production, is really good. It's by Naked Productions and Eloise Whitmore, based at the Sharp Project in Manchester, which is an amazing venue, winners of Silver for Best Sound Design at the APAs. You see, it all comes together here.
It's all working terribly
well. But it's
well.
A brilliant drama.
I bet what our
as
listeners
well.
Are thinking is, I wish we could hear a clip from this in mono. Well, here it is.
I can see it, Sam, but the rocket really is bound for the stars. Crikey.
Should I get the Yanks back on the line?
It's extraordinary. Imagine being strapped to blast.
Joe?
Yeah, but... They are acting badly. Stop. Attack. Destroy. Don't let him escape.
Mayday. Mayday, Eccles 1, I'm under attack. Repeat. Under attack.
Bottle 5, what's your status?
Right, that's the, what's it called, the
Vostok K incident.
Vostok K.
You can find it on BBC Taster.
And it is remarkable, actually. Even in stereo, it's better than that clip was. Will, your second piece.
And the second piece is from URY, University Radio York. And again, it's an interactive drama called You Are Spy. And it's a location-based drama. And the route that you take through the audio depends on your location on campus. So it uses GPS to take you through the story. And that really clever use of the campus as part of the drama and your location is a really interesting way forward. And it's great that a student radio station, and we fully appreciate the limited resources that they have taken the time to produce something as really clever as this. And again, it's won student radio awards and various other bits and pieces. So well done to them.
Here's the setup.
Hello there. My name is Zed. We don't have a lot of time to explain what's going on, but we'll try our best to condense it down so your untrained brain can understand it very quickly.
I don't think criticising the intellect of our new agent is that wise.
Now, Molly, don't lie. You saw the grades in their university records. Nothing to brag about. Anyway, we did uncover your genes through your Gmail account, and remarkably, you are immune to the virus. A virus that has infected everyone on campus.
An extraterrestrial virus.
Molly here has just dropped the big bombshell. Well, the second biggest bombshell of the day, if you're not able to save it. Aliens have invaded this campus here at the University of York. Our intel suggests they've been planning this for many years, and unfortunately, due to this virus infecting everyone in the immediate area, it's been quarantined off.
The virus is currently residing dormant within people's systems. Soon, everybody's brain functions will begin to be inhibited, whilst their primal instincts will consummate the remaining activity
and... In English, please, for our new recruit.
They'll become... zombified.
Wonderfully succinct, Molly. In order to save the world, the campus and all those on it will be destroyed within 1 hour to stop this virus spreading any further.
Well done, University Radio York. Thank you for those. Will, your final clip, Kelly.
So this is from, I'm not sure which clip we're going to play, but...
It's John Bowden.
Oh, lovely John Bowden. So, again, bringing it all back to Sheffield. Indeed. To close the programme.
Amazing how that happened.
It is. And this is Folk on Foot, a podcast... beautifully produced, I have to say, which is no surprise. It's presented by Matthew Bannister, in which he goes with folk musicians to the landscapes, the countryside that has informed and inspired their work, and talks to them about how it's done that. And we hear music performances as well in them. And with John Bowden, the former frontman of Bellowhead.
I've done a few walk and talks myself over the years. I always find that after a minute or so, both of us, whoever I'm talking to, are a bit breathless. This doesn't seem to happen to the boy Bannister. I don't know why that is. Is it because they stand still to do the recording and then walk on a bit?
I think they're really sitting in a pub beer garden.
Well, here they are pretending to go over a stile in Loxley Valley.
We need to go over this,
yep.
This stile now, so this okay. Is another slightly... tricky one.
No problem.
I think what did it was that I at some point discovered English folk music and I started thinking that maybe actually I didn't have to sort of pretend to be Irish.
What are the songs that come to mind when you epitomise that?
It's the songs and it's the singers as well. I mean, I think some of the earliest singers that I found I could emulate without altering my voice too much were people like John Tams and Bill Caddock and Martin Carthy. There's a song on the wonderful Lark Rise to Candleford album, which was made for a stage show, which is sung by Bill Caddock, but it's also sung at the Royal Hotel for carols. So Abroad for Pleasure is one of my sort of first songs I really felt I was able to sing.
Will you sing it for us
as
we walk along?
Yeah, absolutely. Abroad for pleasure as I was walking, it was on a summer calm and clear. There I beheld a most beautiful damsel lamenting for her shepherd dear. Lamenting for her shepherd dear.
Good stuff. That's Folk and Foot, Matthew Bannister with John Bowden. Any other business from the December panel, Will?
Nope. No. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas, even though it isn't yet. Mike?
Nope. Happy Christmas from me too.
Kelly?
So relieved that what happened to that radio station in Anchorage that you sent the clip through didn't happen to us today. That was shocking.
I was going to finish with this. Imagine that you're on the air live. What's the worst thing that can happen? Well, Simon Bates could barge through the door. That would be a bad thing to happen. Richard Park could come in with your P45. But this is arguably worse. Thanks for listening. We'll have another roundtable in January, providing some people agree to be on the panel.
It is 8:29 at FM News 103.7 KFQD, and a sizable earthquake is going on right now and shaking the heck out of the KFQD studios and knocking us off. Holy cow. Folks, I hope you're still with us. We'll get information on that just as soon as we possibly can.
At james.crid.land, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, it's flipping for Christmas in the UK. In the US, it's relatively common for radio stations to suddenly flip to playing Christmas music. You can go to bed one night, wake up, and discover that your favourite radio station is suddenly playing nothing but Rocking Around the Christmas Tree, or All I Want for Christmas Is You. In Ireland, they have a station called Christmas FM, which runs for a month or so on temporary FM frequencies, raising money for charity, and that's all it plays. In Australia, too, ARN runs Elf Radio, an additional online radio station from the end of November right up to Christmas. It's on the company's iHeartRadio app in Australia. In recent years, Christmas-only stations have appeared in the UK, too, but only as additional radio stations on DAB and online. The Hot AC Heart runs a Christmas station on DAB, as do many local stations. But in the UK, at least, there have never been any format flips. Radio stations have typically added Christmas songs to the music mix, slowly at first, normally the last week of November, then quickly ramping up to play lots of Christmas songs the week of Christmas, including Boxing Day, and then they're put away in their box for another year. Now, this is partly being dictated by regulation. Historically, you've not really been able to suddenly change your music choice, but partially it's also been driven, as much is in radio, by tradition as well. Well, all of that has been thrown out of the window in the UK this year, as Magic, a national soft AC outlet, has decided to do what I think must be the first Christmas format flip in UK radio history. And it's a brave move. It's got a lot of press, and it may well attract new listeners to the station who've never had an all Christmas station on FM before. It might also scare some people away, because the effect of dramatically changing the station's sound for almost a month will be really fascinating to examine. The radio ratings in the UK are done by quarter, with a break in ratings over Christmas, so it's unlikely that we'll see the full effect of this flip, since almost all of it will be done outside the ratings period. But I'm curious as to how it'll do, and I bet so are the folks at the Bauer-owned radio station. And dare I say, I think there's a market for a station that doesn't play Christmas music at all, particularly in the UK, which is less schmaltzy and sentimental than the US is about the holiday period. And frankly, I'd much rather tune into that. Bah humbug. It's a time for giving, and a time for receiving, and a time for format flipping. Interesting times ahead. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. And now on the Radio Today programme, here's the very Christmassy David Lloyd.
Oh, Santa here. This is Christmas Radio Moments.
Hamish and Andy are one of the best-known acts in Australia and much loved by the radio fraternity here too. This week last year, they hosted their last radio show.
But before we do this, I don't want to get it too bogged down, Andy, mm-hmm. emotional stuff. But a lot of people might
remember a couple of months ago, like a month or two ago, we had Macklemore on the show, and he was talking about he does a lot of stuff with Ryan Lewis,
yes.
his buddy. And when they stopped for a little while,
yeah.
Ryan Lewis did something incredible. He got Macklemore a framed piece of the carpet of the first studio they recorded in.
Yes, that's right.
And I would like to give to you, Andy, a framed, plaqued piece of the carpet of the first ever studio we recorded.
This isn't the carpet. Under no circumstances is the carpet. I remember how shitty the original studio was.
Sharp
and that's like a nice wool.
Sharp eyes, my friend. Sharp eyes. This is the best lookalike I could find. I only thought of it yesterday.
Yeah.
And then so you can't get into the old building. It's gone. The studio's gone.
Yeah, yeah.
But what a seemingly beautiful gesture.
Yeah, it's seemingly beautiful, but it's not beautiful.
But let's... All right, how about this?
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to a really beautiful gesture. Earlier in the year, I got the company...
Sorry, am I expected to keep this?
Boy, do you have anything for me?
I've got nothing for you, no.
Well, then I guess no.
But I still think this is more of a nuisance than giving you nothing.
Oh, my final upset, Andy.
And you just want to know what the other present was, don't you? That's the way they do it. The last Hamish and Andy show this week in 2017. They met at university, became a comedy duo in 2003, and then student radio, and then building their reputation on the Drive Time show on the Hit Network, which became the highest rating radio series in Australian history. Now, of course, moving on to TV, but still doing the podcast. Staying with overseas broadcasting, arguably the world's first commercial broadcaster launched this week in 1919. It was the Canadian Marconi Company in Montreal, which was a subsidiary of the London Company. The station was called XWA, Experimental Wireless Apparatus, later called CFCFAM. Programs where we had mainly weather reports and gramophone records on a wind-up Victrola record player. And one of the first musical sounds on the station was of a small Swiss music box. Yes, you try that on air tomorrow. And hugely popular, people queuing up in the electrical stores to buy radios, and they used to wire programs into the theatres in Montreal for broadcast during the intermission. And we're told the radio programs became more popular than the films. The station, eventually called CINWAM, left the air in 2010.
Hi, I'm Mark Dickey, General Manager at AM940, Montreal's Greatest Hits. On behalf of the management, of course, I would like to inform you that we ceased programming of AM940 as of 10 o'clock this morning. We will no longer be broadcasting as of 7 this evening. This decision was, for us, very difficult to make. Despite the excellence and dedication of station employees, the current economic climate made this decision unavoidable. We sincerely thank the people here who made this radio station possible, our clients, and you for being faithful listeners.
Farewell to the world's first regular commercial radio station. To Australia now, and it's 6 years since that prank call.
Numbers going in. Oh, jeez, I hope this happens.
Hello, good morning. King Edward VII Hospital.
Oh, hello there. Could I please speak to Kate, please, my granddaughter?
Oh, yes, just hold on, ma'am.
Thank you.
The ill-advised royal prank call this week in 2013 from Today FM in Sydney to the London Hospital where the Duchess of Cambridge was being treated, the call that changed radio across the world. Back to Blighty now, and complementary FM formats under the same ownership are commonplace these days. But 30 years ago, it was a canny idea for the Ocean Sound team on the South Coast to split off one of their overlapping FM frequencies to generate a new, younger format.
You've listened for the sound of things to come. Now it's here. Music radio for the 90s. Power FM. With new people, new programs, and great music. While the others are talking, we're rocking 24 hours a day, every day, on 103.2.
Power FM.
The launch of Power on the South Coast this week in 1988. It's now Capital. And that hot sound really hit Britain properly thanks to the pirate radio stations, notably, of course, Radio London, the offshore station Radio London. And that made its first test transmissions this week in 1964.
Well, it's getting pretty close to news time, only two or so minutes away, but let's fill in that time and tell the news with the shadows. The shadows, of course, are currently appearing in a very important pantomime, Aladdin, with, naturally, Cliff Richard, who else? And out of that panto have come, quite apart from box office success, several excellent melodies, including this one.
The Pirate Radio London, beginning its test transmissions on 266 this week, 54 years ago. The station was to become the template for Radio 1 after it had warmed up a bit, admittedly. Radio 4 now, it's 2010, and Jim Nocte's on the Today programme. And he becomes not the first nor last to do this.
First up after the news, I'm going to be talking to Jeremy Hunt, the Culture Secretary, about broadband. It's 8 o'clock on Monday, the 6th of December. American officials have condemned WikiLeaks after the website published a list of hundreds of facilities said to be vital for American security. Every community in Britain has been promised that it'll have access to the fastest broadband networks within 5 years. Excuse me. And Egypt has called in international shark experts to investigate a series of attacks in the Red Sea. Pardon me, coughing fit. The news comes from Rory Morrison.
I went out through that door and said with a rather strange look on my face, "That didn't go out, did it?" And someone said, "Oh, yes, it did." And I looked at a screen, and there were more emails in 30 seconds than I'd ever seen in my life.
James Nocte this week, 7 years ago, and his reflections more recently. So, with BBC Radio News moving from TV Centre 6 years ago...
This is our last programme from Studio S1 in Television Centre. We're moving Broadcasting House to Broadcasting House.
The death of Roger Moffat, the chap who closed the Light programme and became famous on Hallam 32 years ago.
May we wish you all a very good night.
Radio City 2 and Radio City Talks swapping frequencies 3 years ago.
Radio City 2, now on 105.9 FM.
Absolute 80s launching for reluctant adults 9 years ago.
Absolute 80s, turning to the 70s on the couch and saying, "I want a divorce and I'm taking the synth."
And the beginnings of Bauer Radio 11 years ago with EMAP selling its mags and radio businesses for £1.14 billion. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David and James Cridland and Trevor Dan and Trevor's guests on the roundtable, Kelly, Mike and Will. And thanks to Santa for his surprise appearance in the middle as well. Next week, we're talking to the Radio Academy's new Managing Director. Join us for that.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.